Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Main Street Universe. We will start with a question. Are there 72 degrees difference between Western and Vedic astrology? Did you know that the astrological sign that you think you were born under may not be exactly correct? It is a subject for debate. Why, you may ask? How could this happen? Well, tonight we'll be discussing Vedic astrology with our guest Randy Goldberg, right here on Main Street Universe. Join us in our circle. Welcome to another episode of Main Street Universe, the flagship show, the one that started it all on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. My name is Daniel Michael, and I'm the founder, co-creator of this network, along with my friend Kevin Baird. Associate producer Janice R. White and Brett Hillman will not be here this evening, obviously, as it is Christmas Eve. We'll start right off by announcing the 6 shows on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. Of course, you're listening right now to the flagship one, usually on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Main Street Universe, with myself, Janice R. White, and Brett Hillman. Janice is as well the host of the World Reggae Party right here in Radio Fairfax. And Brett Hillman sort of brings an interfaith element as he's studying to be an Episcopal minister. On Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Queen Mother Imaku with her show Wat'tau. Queen Mother Imaku is a high priestess of the Kemetic African-Egyptian tradition. A lot of people forget that Egypt is, in fact, in Africa, not in the Middle East. She does original language prayers and blessings and all sorts of things. Lots of information packed into 1 hour. That's Queen Mother Imaku with her show Wat'tau. On Friday evenings at midnight, we have Jesse Ann Nicholas George with Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Jesse is the author of 4 books, Activating Compassion and Activating the Companion Workbook, as well as You, Me, Like Dreams and its Companion Workbook, which is out now. And that one is all about relationships. So I think she has a good chance with that one taking off. That's Fridays at midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And then Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Darren Boucare, who is a tarot and palmistry reader, spiritual consultant at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. And Darren calls in from New Orleans to do the show. He sort of opens the phone lines to take readings as well as discuss different spiritual topics. 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sundays. Then Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Kevin Baird. Kevin is the creator of the Horizon Oracle, a series of oracle cards that he himself had created. Kevin comes from a mystical tradition. His grandfather was a dowser, amongst other things. Kevin is an artist and a musician. Check him out 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Main Street Universe or at www.templeofgaia.com. Then on Tuesdays, usually, but not this particular Tuesday, we have Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Miss Susan Weed. Susan is an herbal medicine practitioner, expert, lecturer, author, as well as discussing women's health issues and psychology of healing, about owning it for yourself. That's Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. She'll be back in about 2 weeks, I think the week of January 6th, that particular Tuesday. And then we're going to have some rotating once a month hosts coming back, Earthlight Radio with Ishitar, and Mary Phelan with her Inner Vision show, returning to Main Street Universe to do a once-a-month show with us. So it's right now about 6, 7, or 8 shows, and some other ones possibly coming, as well as the World Reggae Party coming to Fridays in a pre-recorded version with Janice R. White. Tonight we're discussing Vedic astrology with our host, someone who's not too far away from here, actually. His name is Randy Goldberg, and he's in the D.C., Northern Virginia area, close to where I live. And I'm going to go ahead. I see him in the queue, and I'm going to turn his microphone on now. And welcome, Randy Goldberg.
Hey there. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, doing well. After a few technical issues that pushed the show back, but that's quite all right. All was well.
And
these things happen.
Christmas Eve, so heavy energy on Christmas Eve. This whole Christmas is a Uranus-Mars opposition that's creating a lot of tension in the air, and all kinds of unexpected things can happen.
Yes. And
I wanted to take your quiz real quick. The answer to that question was false. The difference between the Vedic and Western astrology is 23 degrees in your sign.
Oh. I heard the number 72 thrown around before, talking about like the axis and the way things wobble around and things
well,
like
that. It could have just said, anyway, but the difference, so if, just to clarify, if you are 22 degrees Cancer, it will turn back and you would end up being 29 degrees Gemini.
Hmm. That's interesting. And we'll get to the Vedic astrology very quickly, but I figured we'd start with a little background first, as this is your first time here with us on Main Street Universe. And start, I guess, from the beginning, at least esoterically or metaphysically speaking, is when did you first begin to explore the metaphysical forces in the universe, whether it be the stars or in their influence, or planets and their influence, or anything else, magic, metaphysics?
Yeah, well, back in high school, I got interested in philosophy and I read an Eastern philosophy book. I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, where we had a coast house where I actually used to go to a Taoist church. So there was a lot of alternative things around in my environment that I was soaking up, and but as soon as I read Eastern philosophy, it was like all over in terms of, I never went back and was just so absorbed, and it's been a huge passion all my life. I ended up going to India and eventually becoming a yogic monk and all kinds of different things.
It's interesting that you mentioned Taoism, because my first step away, I was raised in a family that called itself Southern Baptist, though its influences were vast, just like any family, right? And my first stray away from that on my own, I guess, free will, was taking Kung Fu from a guy down the street for free. He was from Vietnam, and they say he was trained by a monk, and discovering Taoism in that Eastern philosophy in a very practical and very physical way too, right? I was just sort of living it and doing it and practicing 4, 5, 6 hours a day with this guy the one summer, and it was a eye-opening journey to experience that and see how other folks around the world viewed spirituality, energy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
And I guess when, if any, during the course of your discovery and running across the different Eastern philosophies that you mentioned, did you receive resistance from family and friends and things like that, or were you in an environment that was fairly accepting of this search?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but no, I mean, I was in relatively... So I grew up in a Orthodox atheist family. We celebrated Christmas, which was all about Santa Claus. I didn't know there was any connection to Jesus or Christianity. And my dad's a behavioral psychologist, you know, very scientifically oriented. And so, yeah, I mean, what I did, I was definitely the black sheep of the family, definitely didn't really get it and understand it and stuff, but not in the traditional way that you would have, you know, coming from a Southern Baptist family and stuff. So, but I was the rebel.
Right, and honestly, in my opinion, sometimes the really diehard atheists can be some of the most difficult to deal with when you're debating them about something metaphysical, magical, spiritual, astrological, because they really think they're coming from an absolute truth, but instead of it being from a, you know, Bible-thumping standpoint, they think they're using modern science. But what they sometimes forget is that modern science more and more is backing up metaphysics, like the old alchemists of old, right? Who thought that, magic was just a force in nature and in science. And now quantum mechanics,
yeah, well,
quantum physics is pointing in that direction again.
And science is useful and powerful, and it's great for measuring the physical world, but there's a lot more to life and to humans than just the physical world. So a lot of the mental and spiritual dimensions are too subtle to be measured physically, and that's where you run into some of that issues.
Now, you and I had talked off the air a bit, and part of your interest, as well as part of mine, is some of the great thinkers from the early part of the 20th century, and of course, someone there would, you would have to mention Carl Jung, who brought about, you know, some say he even reincarnated the word archetype, and then there's the famous seven servants to the dead, and mysterious him going into trance and talking to people. So explain maybe just a little bit of your own personal experience discovering Jung and discovering some of this philosophy.
Yeah, so just to continue my journey, I got very into Eastern philosophy, particularly yoga and Indian philosophy, and ended up joining a yoga and meditation group and studying with a guru and going to India, studying with my guru there. And I ended up traveling for 10 years overseas. I was eventually 2 years in a monastery where I trained to be a yogic monk. I lived as a monk for 2.5 years. So I was posted in France doing that. And the monastery where I was training for the 2 years was actually in Sweden, International Training Center, people from all over. And so after I left being a monk and came back to the States, and don't have any regrets, it was all a great experience, and I was just ready for another phase, and coming back, getting into the Jungian material and perspective and Joseph Campbell and all that different stuff was so amazing to have a different approach where from the Jungian perspective, that Eastern search can be a bit of a hero's journey where you're going up and out of your body and you're going to conquer the universe and you're going to understand the whole philosophy of the cosmos and different things, whereas, and so it's considered an outward, masculine, heroic search. And the Jungian path is one of going into your wound, into your darkness, into the feminine. It's a downward movement. And so it's just been an incredible counterbalance and great perspective to balance out what can be sometimes an inflated and ungrounded It just, for instance, I love the whole perspective of wholeness versus enlightenment or perfection. And so I just put it all together, and all my readings and everything I do basically comes from a Jungian perspective these days. So.
And
amazing
what
stuff.
Jung, and some people around him would consider Jung to be extremely, quote-unquote, religious. And he would describe himself that way. And the interesting thing was he viewed religion, of course, in the Gnosis way or the Gnostic way, of that it is an exploration and meant to be so and not meant to be dogmatic. He respected the dogma to a degree, I think, if my history on him is right, but he had a certain side of him that was like, but we are supposed to explore beyond that. We're supposed to be respectful and reverent, but be explorers as well.
Now, in his day, he was trying to be accepted as a scientific psychologist, so he had a certain persona that he had mm-hmm. to play to, but he was himself very much a mystic and very much in tune with and understood and explored all the different mysteries of life and particularly rebelled against the narrow, you know, one chakra view of Freud that everything is sexual. Okay, that's the second chakra. But Jung is like saying, look, we have these seven chakras. We have so many perspectives and motivations and levels and... So it's just a lot broader.
Yeah, and then in truth, the energy centers are just more than that. The seven are the focused, you know, ones that came into, I guess, the most, as I said, the most focused ones that are used. And I totally agree that Freud, and I've always thought that about Freud myself, is that he was a bit single and narrow. Not that he wasn't bright in his own way.
When he taught with Jung, because Jung was anointed to be his successor, you know, he said to Jung straight out, listen, you have to stay strict to this sexual dogma. That's going to be our bulwark against religion, and it's going to be the stand that we have to take. And Jung just completely rebelled against that, and thought that was ridiculous, and that was the parting of their ways.
And that could go into other debates, including... say other from the 19th, you know, early 20th century, like Crowley, who was very much into the sex side of things and debated with other people in the Golden Dawn and all this. I don't want to trail off too far, but it is interesting. But they were all explorers, and I've always been fascinated by all the mystics of that time period. Even from other perspectives, even from more conservative Christian perspectives, but I've always been interested in the mystics of that time period. So let's move on now, and a little bit of history and a little bit of some of the things that you've been involved in. You mentioned being a yogic monk, and you did live in Calcutta, I think, for about 2 years, right?
Yeah, that's right. I was living in an ashram and studying with my guru, and Calcutta is an amazing place. It's like here, upside down, like another world.
And our old host, Evan Pass, who used to host Ariana Radio, had a very similar, very inspiring experience with his time in India and wants to return. So now you're here and you're Randy Goldberg, and it's the modern era. And part of your practice, amongst other things, is Vedic astrology. And I guess for those that don't know, and of course I'm going to conduct parts of this interview to folks as if they have no idea what it is, they've never heard of it before. So of course the first question usually would be, what is the difference between Vedic astrology in Western, or what some people call tropical astrology? Are the signs different? Are they the same? How would you describe the basic fundamental difference?
There's a lot of similarities. The signs and zodiac is the same. These are the same signs, the same houses. there's slight differences, and Vedic astrology comes out of teachings from the Vedas, so they have very ancient teachings on astrology, and so it's based on those teachings, and it's an ancient system which is completely a part of Indian society. In India, it would be impossible to think about like getting married without seeing another person's astrological chart. You know, it's something that's completely accepted in that society, which, you know, it's hard to grasp and so different in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And so the main fundamental difference is that 2,000 years ago, when a lot of the Western astrological teachings were starting, they picked the point in the sky, which was at the vernal equinox, at spring. And so it was connected with the beginning of Aries, and that point in the sky, it's been 2,000 years now, has drifted. And the system is called tropical, whereas the Vedic astrology is called sidereal, and it's not connected with a star, which has changed. It's connected with a fixed point in the sky, and so it's remained the same. And so the sidereal system is remained where it was throughout these 2,000 years, and it's due to that drift of 23 degrees, and that's the main difference. So, like I mentioned before, a lot of people, their signs will shift, and their planets might shift to a house, different house than it was in. And they're just two different systems, the two different perspectives. They both have value. In general, the Western is a little bit more psychological, and the Vedic is more predictive. It's very powerful for telling people destiny and what's going to happen. And they're both useful lenses, and they both have their value. And I use both. I'm not just a Vedic astrologer, but I integrate both Western and Vedic astrology from a Jungian perspective.
Okay. And you brought up something that was another question that I think is very interesting, because this debate came up a few years ago when people mentioned, well, there's been a shift and things are different now, and there's been a wobble in the earth and all this sort of things, all many different things, to where you're not born under the same sign exactly according to the sun sign thing, according to the Western thing. So mm-hmm. I guess simplify, and just to restate for the audience, with Vedic astrology, it's whatever is there at the time you're born, not where the sun is. It's whatever is there. And the star, even if the star burns out, is just more of a marker.
Yeah. Another nice piece to throw in here. From my perspective, astrology is a symbolic language, and it's not a mechanical thing that the planets are influencing us and causing us like robots to do something. It's more that everything has meaning, and you can learn the symbolic language, that there's a weather forecast of meaning that is embedded in the sky, kind of based on this principle is as above, so below. And so there's a rich language, a rich metaphorical language that we can use to, and it's part of the whole Asian tradition that life is magical, life, that the world is alive, that consciousness is everywhere and it's reflected and you're engaged in a living universe, and that it's not just, and this is a big divide then between science and a more holistic perspective, but that we are engaged, you know, this is a great saying by Jung that humans are meaning-making machines, and we're learning through astrology to draw certain meaning that's there, and we can see patterns and cycles, and so you don't have to believe anything. It's just about entertaining possibilities and enjoying this mythic language.
And again, yeah, very much going back to the Jungian philosophy there. And I also want everybody to know that if they wish to reach Randy, his link is on the show page, on the show marquee, and it's randygoldberg.org. And where else can they find you, Randy?
Also at the astrodc.com. It's an easy one to remember.
Okay, astrodc.com. And we'll post both of them on the Main Street Universe Facebook page, as well as I'll add Astro DC to the archive page as well.
Well, it's the same site, so if they don't like that, it doesn't really matter.
I've heard that Vedic astrology deals in three phases or cycles, and I find some of these interesting and almost creeping up on being modern again. And what I mean by that, it deals with like a 120-year cycle of a human. And I'm curious if you could speak about that, like from 0 to 40 being youth, and then et cetera.
Yeah, well, the main thing about that, and one of the reasons that Indian astrology is extremely predictive, is that they have a system of seeing a planetary period that's activated at every phase of your life. And as an astrologer, you get told what planetary phase, and these are called dasha periods. So very useful to find out what dasha period you're running, what phase you're in right now, and how that is influencing you. And that whole cycle to go through all the planets takes 120 years. So obviously we don't all go through all of them at this point in our longevity. But, it's a powerful system.
And one thing I liked about it that I found interesting, it said 0 to 40 is youth, 40 to 80 is middle age, or at least the sources I read, and 80 to 120 is old age. So I've just, in 2 years, entered middle age. So I just got out of youth 2 years ago.
Well, since we don't live to 120, that doesn't really apply, but again, that's a little bit more euphemistic language. In the Indian system, and one of the reasons there's a lot less Indian astrologers, Vedic astrology is really complicated, really difficult to learn, and it's filled with a lot of ancient language and even dogmas and all kinds of things, so you've got to weed through all kinds of loaded language, and really takes a while to understand what's there in the teachings.
Which doesn't surprise me. I mean, the Hindu pantheons, the Hindu religion, it can be extremely complex and regional and everything else. So it kind of doesn't surprise me that its astrology system can be a bit complex as well.
Yeah, and just to clarify, as in terms of, because Hinduism is a relatively new phenomena that the yogic system is thousands of years old, and they don't have a central Bible like there is, say, in Christianity. And in the last couple of years, it's been a little bit more codified and brought together as what the current modern identity of being a Hindu.
Right.
In that Hindu religion, then things got sort of a lot more fossilized, and it's kind of going to the temple and
right,
worshiping idols, and a lot of religious dogma there as well, like in any religion. And this stuff is more grounded in the Vedas and in the whole yogic tradition.
It makes me almost think a little bit of a comparison with the Enochian of the pre-biblical texts, how some people consider themselves pre-Christian Christians that believe in archangels and mystical practices. There's kind of a similarity there, I think, between that and what you were discussing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm 100% they're the same. Religion divides and spirituality unites. So every tradition, every religion had its mystical branch and wing, which was usually rejected by the mainstream part of that, and completely, and that's the perennial philosophy or pantheism, another description.
Yeah, and so it's important also to remember that but you made a really good point there. And it's also that remember that when I'm doing these shows, I'm also saying these things sometimes to round them up and for people that literally don't know at all, you know, like they
mm-hmm.
haven't heard
sure.
before.
Sure, absolutely.
And
yeah.
To clarify that.
Gotcha.
And so us explaining things clearly like that is good, and we get lots of new listeners in the archives and lots of interested folks. And now to the point of the planetary periods, or described as the 9 planetary periods, or 7 and the sun and moon. And I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit more on that and how that came
well,
about.
Well, okay, another real fundamental difference is there's a lot of differences between Western and Vedic astrology.
Right.
And the more we get into the technical side of this, it might be a little bit boring and stuff. But anyway, for people who know astrology, it might be more interesting. But they use, you can think of the Indian system as more similar to medieval or Hellenistic astrology, which is something that's starting to become more popular, and more there's a renaissance of that coming back up here in the West. So there's a lot more similarities between those systems rather than modern Western astrology. And in like in those systems, they use whole house systems. They use 9 planets. They don't use the outer planets. Pluto and Neptune and Uranus weren't discovered in those periods, and so that's why you have this 9 system.
And back in ancient times, those were the visual planets, right? You could see the 7 planets maybe from the
yeah,
Earth?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, cultures throughout history, their TV was the sky, and people were very tuned in to what they could see, and it's hard to imagine what an impact the night sky had on all peoples of this world, basically before electricity.
Right. And some people call that the 7 Ptolemaic planets, the ones that are visible, and then you add the sun and the moon, and you have 9. It's funny because that number 9 in different numerologies.
No, you're not. You're adding north and south node.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Mm-hmm. So those aren't actually planets, but they're used in both systems, in both Western and Vedic astrology. And the nodes of the moon are eclipse points in the sky, and so they're invisible, and so their influence in Vedic is considered to be tricksters and they disrupt things and troublemakers.
That's interesting. I like that.
And it's a very different perspective. In Western astrology, they're considered to be where we're coming from and our past, and then where we're moving towards, where in the Vedic system, they're kind of where we're very detached and where we're very obsessed. And so it's a totally different perspective. But the Indian system is a lot more black and white. You know, they consider certain planets to be malefics and some to be benefics, and they're much more. I mean, it's funny. An Indian person will go for a reading, and the reading will last 30 seconds. It will be yes, no, no. Will I get married? Will I get this job? How will my health be? End of reading. And but it's a different culture and a different mindset.
Now, do you think that you've heard, I'm sure, in your practice, debates, and I'm just asking you of an opinion here, not necessarily anything harsh. I'm just saying mm-hmm. that you've probably heard people say, is one more accurate than the other, or is one just a different approach than the other?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I already addressed that. Basically, the Western is a little bit more psychological, and the Vedic is more predictive.
Okay.
And, you know, from the Indian perspective, you have a destiny, and you have certain experiences you're going to have, and your attitude towards having those experiences. You could be a street sweeper and be the happiest person in the world. But so from their perspective, things are a lot more faded than we're usually kind of comfortable with from the Western perspective.
So you're saying they would maybe be a little more brutally honest, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely. And there's people that come and, you know, it's a question I get asked a lot about, you know, is there things that are scary to tell clients and this and that?
Right.
And, you know, the person said to one client, you know, from the perspective of the chart, it doesn't look like it's going to work out with marriage for you in this lifetime. And she was like, oh, I'm so relieved. You know, I'm 50-something and I've been beating myself up, thinking that I should and this and that. And it was just, she was so happy to hear that and such a relief. And
right,
freed
but
up
you
energy.
Thought it, Peter, it might be scary to say.
Yeah.
And it turned out not to be so bad.
Not at all. But, you know, different people have different tolerances for the truth, like you said. So you got to be careful how you deliver certain things.
Absolutely. And that could get into a whole other aspect is the idea of if someone comes to you as a new customer, and do they ever say something to you like, oh, well, that's not true according to my astrology. What I mean is, have you ever done a reading and somebody has argued with you about it? Because I'm just saying this question based on the fact that the Vedic astrology isn't as well known as the Western, and have you ever had, like, bitterness?
Right. Well, again, I share both perspectives, so we look at both lenses. But, yeah, sure, that happens all the time. So, again, this is a symbolic language, and each of these are archetypes, and
right.
Every archetype has a lot of different ways of expressing, and even, you know, two people born at the same time at the same place, if one left that hospital and went to the ghetto, and another one went to a really privileged environment, there are seeds of potential, and they can express in very different ways. So, absolutely. And so, again, if a client comes to me, and sometimes clients come and like, oh, I'm kind of nervous, I'm kind of scared about what's going to happen, and it's like, listen, this is just a conversation. And as I'm doing the reading, I like as much dialogue as we go, and I'm just kind of explaining the different archetypal energies that flow in a person's psyche, and I'm curious how it resonates, to how it manifested for that person, and what things resonate or don't, or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like with any form of reading, there's also the element that sometimes the person just doesn't want to accept what the answer is. And that's always that as well.
Well, I mean, part of being a good astrologer is figuring out what they can hear and how much they can hear and this and that. I certainly don't want to force anything down somebody's throat. What, you know, my understanding, they know more about themselves than I do. I don't claim to take the high hand or anything like that.
Yeah, and my friend Evan, who I mentioned before on this episode, he used to be the host of Zariana Radio on our network. He used to say about the tarot, he said, they're little mirrors that reflect what the soul already knows. And I always thought that was
Yeah, good. I mean, another reason that I'm a good astrologer, and I'm someone, in my chart, I have no air, so I memorize very little, even of the astrological system. I run my whole life is run on intuition, and I've studied astrology well enough that I've gotten to the place where you learn how to play tennis and then you forget it and you throw it away. But if you don't have the discipline to go through the first step, you know, you have to learn the system, and after that the whole system frees up and you just it's there are symbols. Those symbols reflect on my consciousness and evoke intuition, and all my years of doing intuitional practices of meditation and stuff have helped to amplify that. And, you know, I also have a healing practice It'd be good to mention.
Yes, go on, please.
I'm also a massage therapist, and I do cranial sacral therapy. I do energy work and polarity and a lot of different healing modalities, and am a practitioner of family constellation therapy, which is a shamanic ancestral healing modality that looks at family patterns that get passed down in a family system.
That's interesting. And that was going to lead me to part of my next question, since we were talking about Vedic astrology and Eastern philosophies and things like that. Just to get back to a basic philosophy of your own, or a spiritual philosophy of your own, for the listeners, do you believe in a reincarnation and that we live many lives?
Yeah, well, I mean, so this ties into my healing practice. I see it all the time. I also studied with Roger Wolger, and I lead workshops on past life regressions, and he called his particular past life work a deep memory process, and he was a Jungian psychologist. And you constantly see patterns that come up, particularly just in the body and stuff, and deep traumas that are connected with past lives. And again, the Indian, all of the Eastern philosophy talk about reincarnation. They talked about it even in Christianity and got rid of it at the Council of Trent, just because they thought that, well, if we give them one life and say that there's damnation, if they blow it, that will scare them into going the right way. So in the yoga philosophy, in terms of spirituality, is about coming into your own essential nature. And human beings is at a unique place in evolution. We can either move forwards or backwards. And backwards is basically sort of moving into animality, degrading and just getting absorbed in crude matter and the senses. And as we elevate and become more subtle, then we're moving more towards pure consciousness. And they have a nice sort of definition of spirituality of having four elements, the four elements of Dharma. And those are expansion, the mind, the stara, the mind is meant to expand, flow, rasa. The mind is meant to be in the flow with nature and the universe. And when you go against that flow, things that tend to mess up. And if you go along with the flow, things tend to be in a good rhythm. And then there's service, that spirituality is not about being self-absorbed. And, you know, it actually, rather than focusing solely on yourself, and I mean, it's a great therapy even just to go out and help others and see how there's people who have a lot worse than your own drama that's going on. And it's natural unfolding as your heart opens and you start to see how we're all in this together. There's a oneness. You naturally want to help others. The division falls away. And then the last aspect of it is self-realization, moksha, and understanding your true nature.
And how long now have you been a Vedic astrologer?
I was studying when I was living in Calcutta in 85, 86. So that's when I began my studies.
Okay. And during your time in Calcutta, I'm curious if there's any experiences of folks that you still contact while you were there. Do you still keep in touch with anyone there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there's a great friend of mine. He's got an amazing book. He's still a yogic monk. And he's written a book called After Capitalism and Integrating Spirituality and Politics, and talks about politics and bioregions and decentralized economics and holistic values and stuff. And I have a whole circle and network of friends that from that period and from all over the world.
I'm just curious because some people think, oh, you go off on a spiritual retreat, you come home, and I was just curious if there was any connect, you know, any still connect left over, which is good.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all one continuous. It's not like a separate thing for me. It's all connected, and it's all a continuous unfolding, and it's all about growth. Meditation is about awareness, and that awareness keeps growing, and sometimes you become, oh, you know, I like the phrase of Jung that rather than imagine and looking at imaginary figures of light, bring that light into your shadow and illuminate the dark places within yourself. And he would say that the second half of life, that mature spirituality, that spiritual work in that phase of life is shadow work, finding out how you're fooling yourself, finding out what are the ways that you're not who you think you are, that you are, or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. Working on the shadow is so important. And if you deny that and don't do that, then to me, that's okay if you're at beginning stages of something or anything, as everyone will be. You know, you're young, you're at the beginning, you discover something.
But I think
regardless of your practice, if you don't work on the shadow, then the real work's not being done at some point.
Yeah,
and
I would agree with that.
Now I'd like to go on to something a little bit more about you in an outward way, I guess, and that would be some of your media appearances to share with our audience. You've been on both CNN
yeah.
and NPR.
And actually, I think I'm the only astrologer in the world that can say that they've been interviewed by CNN, Washington Post, and NPR. So
that's
I've been
right.
very lucky with my media outreach. And I predicted the 2008 housing bubble crash in the Washington Post. And because of that, then I was interviewed by CNN. And then on NPR, kind of as a quirk, they sort of called me up on their business show, the Marketplace show, and asked me for what was the outcome of the healthcare bill, and I said that it was all going to pass, and it did, and so that was also great exposure.
And I'm curious of which of any of those three experiences, did any of them feel awkward to you, or which one felt the best, or you know what I mean? Like, which one to you felt like really like a great flow? Like, I'm here, and wow, I really like this. Or did they all three feel like that, and you felt comfortable? I'm just curious about how the media like that felt.
Well, the CNN was the most awkward. They came to my house and interviewed, and you know, they kind of like say camera rolling, and you know, like I didn't want to change my position on my seat, even though I was in a little bit sitting awkwardly, and you know, they just film the whole thing in 30 seconds, and it's like, oh, shoot, I wish I had relaxed and just been more comfortable with that, but it is what it is, and it takes them out fine. So
it's always different when it's visual, of course.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
It makes it different, and I agree with that. So I just want to remind everybody who is listening now or will be listening in the magical time machine that is the archive listen of Main Street Universe, that we're talking to Randy Goldberg, and he is a metaphysical practitioner of a few different practices, including a Vedic astrologer as well as a Western astrologer. And you do yoga as well as, do you do any other sort of healing practitioner? I thought I saw it in your bio.
Yeah. I'm a LMT. I'm a licensed massage therapist. I specialize in cranial sacral therapy, which is a light touch healing modality that works with the nervous system. And I lead workshops in family constellation therapy. And that was developed by a German man named Bert Hellinger. And there's been a revolution in psychology that's happened in the last 20-30 years where field dynamics and constellating a field has become very popular, and well-known, and it's not very well-known in the States.
Mm-hmm.
But in this work, particularly in workshops, we'll have people stand up, and somebody will be working on an issue, and people will stand up and represent different members of that person's family or whatever the issue is they're working on. And these people don't know anything about that person's family or anything, and they'll be moved by the energy of the field. You constellate the field, and so they'll just notice what's going on in their body, and they'll start to have certain feelings, certain impulses to move, certain emotions. And so a whole picture emerges that's an energetic picture that's very different than whatever intellectual story you might have had in your head. And that way it's really valuable information that comes forth, and a lot of times different family secrets and, a lot of different things emerge, and it's very powerful work. I'm going to be presenting at a joint Jungian Quaker conference in February. It's called the Friends Conference on Religion and Psychology. And I'll be presenting some family constellation workshops at that conference.
That's interesting, because that definitely fills into that Jungian thing of bypassing the conscious mind. And there's this thing beyond it. And then, of course, some magicians believe in that. Some metaphysical practitioners believe in that trick beyond the conscious mind. And we won't get too deep into it because we're starting to run a little low on time now. But that's very interesting, and I'm glad to hear about that technique.
All the modalities I do, to a large extent, are about, because if you could fix the problem, if you had the solution, you would just figure it out if you could do that with your conscious mind. And
mm-hmm.
So, everything I do is about getting some more information than what you know consciously.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming down now to about 8 minutes, and I'll ask one more astrology question. It's going to be a little bit more of a wrap-up question, and we'll move on to closing out. So someone would ask, and someone did ask me at one point, they said, so what if a star you were born under burns out? Would that cause you to lose any quality in your astrological sign in Vedic astrology? And I'm wondering if you can answer that question. What if that star...
that's similar to what I was saying. My perspective is not that those objects, those are big rocks there that are sending vibes that force you like a robot to act in certain ways. It's a symbolic language. And so we have that exact example in the case, it's the same basic sort of thing. Pluto is no longer a planet, yet Pluto is a planet that we use in Western astrology, and it doesn't make any difference that it's not considered a planet anymore, this or that. The symbolic meaning of where it was and how you can take that point and see how that cycle. Pluto transits are very much related to transformation, and you'll see big turning points and transformations going on in people's lives when they go through a big Pluto transit. So, it's all about the symbolic language and not about the external. And ultimately, this is an intuitive art. The people that do tarot with flipping bottle caps and, you can use kind of anything. It's about getting in touch with your intuition, and it's not about some external thing forcing you mechanically to do something.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us this evening, Randy Goldberg.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been a great pleasure. I really enjoyed it, and looking forward to doing more. We could look forward to doing a reading show or whatever.
Yeah,
and I want to, if anybody was sparked by some ideas or interest, they can feel free to call me or email me. All my info is on my website at astrodc.com. And looking forward to exploring more.
All right. And it would be great to have you back on, like I said, to do a reading show, and I'd like to know what my own, I'll find a place to find my own thing. I've always been told I was Aquarius and Western, being born January 20th.
Yeah, I mean, so another point, just on that point, in the Vedic astrology, your rising sign is basically what people are interested in, rather than the sun sign. The sun sign is much less important than Vedic astrology. So the whole foundation of the chart is what's called the Lagna, the rising sign, the first house. So usually people are a lot different than how they're described in the Western astrology.
We could definitely continue this more, but like I said, we're running out of time, and I want to remind everybody that Randy can be reached at randygoldberg.org and astrodc.com, right?
That's right.
Okay. And again, we're a network of 6 shows. This one, which is usually on Wednesday, Susan Weed is usually on this night at 10 p.m., Main Street Universe at 7, Queen Mother Imaku at 2 p.m., our one daytime show, Jesse and Nicholas George with Activating Compassion at 12 midnight, Darren Bucher at 7 p.m., and then Kevin Barrett at 10, and then we have the rotating Earthlight Radio and Mary Thielen, which are dates to be announced. They've been here and they've been back, but they're going to be announcing when the rotating shows are coming back. But again, thank you very much, Randy. It was a pleasure to have you on and to discuss this form of astrology that a lot of folks are not that familiar with.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been great.
All right. And everyone, you've been listening to Main Street Universe, the network reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Have a great and merry Christmas, happy holidays, and we will see you again very, very soon.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.